A Harrison Ford podcast, where we go through all of Harrison Ford's movies.
Hey, I said it right!
You did.
I did! Oh my god.
You did say it right.
I didn't fuck up the opening.
Nope.
That's amazing. I'm pretty proud of myself. So today we're talking about The Fugitive. Oh, we should say our names though, shouldn't we?
Yep. Hi, I'm Rachel.
I'm Lauren. And we are your hosts, or your tour guides along the way of Harrison Ford's life.
Yep. We're the tour guides of the Ford Pat.
Oh, see, now I feel better.
Because I screwed it up.
Well, not really. I shouldn't feel bad that you screwed up.
It's fine.
I just, now the burden's on me.
Nope, I said I fucked it up.
That's okay. Well, it wouldn't be a show if one of us didn't do something wrong. Because
true.
That's why the show is fun. Or not fun. The Fugitive came out in 1993. And he plays the character of Richard Kimble. And this is actually based on a television series from the 1960s.
Really?
Yes.
Then you would think they would... never mind.
We'll talk about that later. Well, actually, I thought it would be fun before we get into the actual film itself. Harrison turned down a lot of movies over the next 2 years, 93 and 94. So I put a little test together for you.
Oh, Jesus.
And the audience. Thought it would be fun.
Okay.
So you want to give a little pause before you answer if you know the answer and let the audience, you know, sort of, you know, get in. All right. So, which of these films that came out in 1993 did Harrison Ford turn down? A, Indecent Proposal with Robert Redford. So he played the Robert Redford role, Woody Harrelson, and Demi Moore. The Philadelphia Story with Denzel Washington and Tom Hanks. Or C, Schindler's List.
Which did he turn down?
Yes.
Oh, I would say Philadelphia Story.
No, it was Schindler's List.
What? Ah! Oh, that is dumb.
And I'll give you another one then. Let's see if you can get this one. Which of these three did he turn down? A, Mrs. Doubtfire with Robin Williams. B.
Wait, would he be Robin Williams or Pierce Brosnan?
I'm not telling you what role he turned down, but probably the Robin Williams role. These are all leads.
Yeah, but Pierce Brosnan is more his type than the Robin Williams role.
That's true, but not the lead. B, Jurassic Park in the Sam Neill role.
Okay.
Or C, Last Action Hero in the Arnold Schwarzenegger role.
Doubtfire.
Jurassic Park.
No, it wouldn't. He'd be terrible.
This is why he probably turned it down.
He would have been terrible with Sam Neill. Let Sam Neill play it.
Well, Sam Neill plays himself in everyday life, so Harrison Ford can't be actually Sam Neill.
Whatever, he shouldn't have been offered that part.
That's very smart. This role in The Fugitive was originally offered to Alec Baldwin. We have a theme. The third time that Alec Baldwin was offered a role that he either said no to, or it just didn't work out, and he went off and did a play.
Oh, boy.
This is directed by Andrew Davis, who did Under Siege and Above the Law, and I listened to the commentary, and he is lovely. I actually like this guy. And everyone got along on sets. That's
good.
That's very helpful. It took 15 weeks to film, and here's your favorite part. Harrison did his research with doctors, including scrubbing in on a surgery.
I hate that.
I love this stuff. I think that scrubbing in on a surgery is a little too far. I don't know if I want to wake up and find out that a movie star was watching over
my surgery.
So the way that Harrison described it was he assisted and scrubbed in under everything that he could do under the law. Yeah. Under the law.
Stupid.
Yes. Luckily, I'm assuming no one died. It was assisted in a bypass operation. But the other stuff is fine. You know, going on rounds and, you know, sort of getting a sense of, you know, the real life situation of it. And there were several drafts over years that Harrison sort of read and before he decided to finally do it. But they went in really... not really with a full script, is my understanding. The ending took place in a subway car, and they literally couldn't film it in that day and age. and I'll go more into that later. But I think there's a really good reason that Tommy Lee Jones won the Oscar for this, because he got to invent all of these amazing lines for himself. But do you want to do your summary?
Sure. So this movie, I liked it fine.
Oh, no.
It was stupid in the beginning because the court case doesn't establish anything, and they wait until later in the movie to establish what happened with this fucking court case.
But it's not about the court case.
Yes, it is, because otherwise I'm like, I don't know. I thought it was dumb he was in prison in the first place.
It's called The Fugitive. It's about a man on the run.
Then started with him on the run, okay, and flashbacks, you know, to her dead.
I'm taking my commentary. This is not about that. This is about your summary. Do your summary.
Here's the thing. So it starts him and his wife, and she's like, oh, you look hot in a tux. And so then they like seem happy, and then he comes home. Someone has taken a ceramic ball to his wife's head and killed her. And then it goes to the... And, like, he realizes he's a suspect when they keep questioning him after it happened. Then, which is the part that frustrates me, the court case is like, you said a mysterious man with an arm did it. No, we don't believe you. You're sentenced to... You have a death sentence. And I'm like, what the fuck? First of all, a judge wouldn't do that. It would be the jury, but there wasn't a fucking jury. The judge did. It was...
Put a pin in that. I have a reason behind that.
Whatever it is, it's dumb and it's frustrating.
Director agrees with you.
Good. So then, he's heading to the penitentiary on a... Why was that a Bill Cosby impression?
I don't know.
On a bus. And then the one guy decides he's going to shank a guard, and so then it turns into, like, literally a train running over the bus.
You didn't think that train wreck was amazing?
Yeah, but it was just, like, it went to crazy town real fast. And so then there's Harrison Ford and this guy who literally never is given a name. They escape. The other inmate.
Oh, okay.
The other inmate.
But you meant Tommy Lee Jones. No. I was like, he has a name.
He has a name, but I don't remember it.
Sam Gerard.
And I was like, he's a U.S. Marshal. Yes. So then the other inmate is like, helps Harrison Ford and then goes, don't follow me. And then, like, you think that's the end of seeing him. So then Harrison Ford runs off into the woods, and Tommy Lee Jones is like, he's not dead, which is like his whole spiel, the whole movie. And so they continually keep finding Harrison Ford as he's on the run. They find him in the, he is in an ambulance that he steals because they're, like, checking out the hospitals. And he steals an ambulance, and they find him in this thing. Then he goes down into the drains. They find him in the drains. Then he jumps off a fucking waterfall or a dam. And
I didn't do it. I don't care.
And I didn't kill my wife. I don't care. First of all, Harrison Ford would have been dead as fuck.
That is true.
But he was fine.
Suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, he literally, in the words of Tommy Lee Jones, Peter Panned off of the thing.
Improv line by Mr. Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, Tommy Lee Jones, don't quit your day job. Don't improvise. Oh, so he...
Stop!
Jumped off the thing, like, survived, slept in some leaves, and then this is after he had shaved in the hospital. He stole some old guy's clothes, some old guy's food, and shaved. So then he escapes the waterfall. He goes, he gets dye and dyes his hair slightly darker. In reality, he should have dyed his hair blonde because he continued to dye it brown.
It was black. I felt like it was more like black, right?
But then halfway through the movie, they gave that up and his hair is back to the normal color.
Well, maybe it was a rinse.
Whatever it was dumb. Just either commit to it or don't do it in the first place. So then he goes about that, whatever. Basically, he's trying to find the guy with the one arm who killed his wife to prove his innocence. And so he sees his one friend and he's like, help me. And then he lies and says he's in St. Louis to his lawyer so that they're off his trail. But then they, like, fucking investigative reporting heard the subway announced what the next stop was, and they were like, he's in Chicago! And I was like, okay. For real. Like, calm down.
You just don't like 90s movies.
No, I hate 90s movies. And so then they go back and forth a bunch. He keeps thinking they're gonna catch him because the guys who live upstairs from him, which, here's what this part drove
me. The Polish family?
The Polish family lives upstairs. The kid got arrested for being a drug dealer. And then he was like, he lives below me. And I guess it was... No. Yeah, to find out about, like, so they could find out he was at Cooks County trying to figure out the one-armed guy. Like, that was what...
The marshals find out where he is. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's a cat and mouse game.
But the thing is, like, other than that, that was completely pointless because no one... You could have done that without having to arrest a random kid, do the scene where he's like, this is where it was.
Yeah, but it added that tension when he thinks he's going to get arrested, but they're there to arrest the kid.
No, but that's fine. Do that. But, like, the thing that the kid gave him up and then they went to the apartment... Like, none of that needed to be in this movie. It literally could have been, like, Tommy Lee Jones doing his job.
I think you're nitpicking, but okay.
And being, like... It could have been Tommy Lee Jones doing his job as a fucking marshal or even the detectives of the Chicago PD being like, well, if he's back in Chicago and he keeps saying a one-armed man did this, maybe he's trying to find the one-armed man. That would be the logical explanation. Yeah, but it takes them half the fucking movie. They're detectives. They're detectives and it takes them so long to realize
that. In fact, he says that. I am not here. They are not detectives. They are U.S. Marshals.
No, not him, but the cops.
Yeah, but the cops don't care. He did it. Of course he did. He was convicted.
But they're trying to catch him, so wouldn't you be like, I'm going to actually do my job and, like, try and do this?
To me, it seemed like, I mean, I guess we're getting into commentary, was that... the only person who really cared was Tommy Lee Jones, even though he says he didn't care.
All right, well, I'll keep going.
The detectives were just like, he did it, he was convicted, because it makes them look bad.
Yeah, all right, hold on, let me keep going. Right? So then they go back and forth, it's cat and mouse, he finds the guy, he calls them and, like, leaves the phone off the hook so that they can trace the call to the guy with the one arm.
Mm-hmm.
And they are like, hey, this guy's sketchy. And he's basically setting up everything for that to be like, look, I'm innocent, here's all this shit.
Yeah.
He goes back into the hospital. He gets caught at the hospital because he tries to save a kid. And Julianne Moore, in, like, the smallest role of her career, like, is there for a hot second and is the...
I will talk about what happened because it was supposed to be a bigger role. Continue. Oh,
and so she, like, catches him, blah, blah, blah. Like, the whole thing is basically so he can get the one-armed man. So the one-armed man starts chasing Harrison Ford in a subway car. But only after Harrison Ford has learned that the reason... His wife is dead, and they were trying to get him was because...
Because of Provasic.
Yeah, they were trying to do a drug, and it caused liver damage. And they didn't want to... They didn't want it to... Like, they were trying to sell it as this drug that literally had no side effects. And he was the one... He was the doctor who kept sending in all the liver damage reports that he had. And so...
Well, he was sending in the samples, and then they were being switched.
They were switched.
He didn't know they were damaged because he wasn't the guy looking at them. He was just sending in the samples.
No, he knew that his samples were damaged. He didn't understand why the drug... Like, he knew. He didn't know they were switching out his samples is what he did not know.
No, yeah, he didn't know that. But I don't think he knew that
He knew that the drug was causing that, and that's why... By the time... All of it was processed to where they were getting money from it. He was already in jail, so he had no idea any of that was happening.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I took it that he already knew that, like, he knew what was causing liver damage.
So he just went to Jane Lynch's character to just verify what he knew because he seemed surprised.
He went to the guy. He goes, "Let me see my samples," because he knew that his samples, like, that they had liver damage for his. Patients. So he went and got the samples and he was surprised because all of his samples were suddenly perfectly healthy livers and they were all the same liver.
Oh, wow. I thought that he figured it out after Jane Lynch looked under the microscope.
That's how he figured out that they switched out.
You know,
it's
funny because, and I had not seen this for years, and I watched it again, but I watched with the commentary so I couldn't hear everything. But, under the commentary, the director was like, it's really funny that when people think of this movie, they don't remember the actual, like, ending part of why it was. Like, the whole thing with the drug, that gets past people because they're so focused on, like, the fugitive running part. And I guess, like, that's what happened to me because I only remember the Provasic part because it's in my favorite stand-up, John Mulaney. Does this whole thing about meeting Bill Clinton when he was a kid in that ballroom where they filmed the scene, and he does an impression of have you not seen this?
The John Mulaney.
Yeah. Oh my God. So he does a impression. He's telling the story, and he's like, "It's the ballroom in Chicago, you know." And then he'll tell the story, and then start telling the story, and he goes, "All because of Provasic," and he does this really funny impression, much better than mine, of Harrison Ford. And so that's all I think of now when I see that. Is the thing. Anyway, everyone should watch that on Netflix. Oh, continue. There's more.
Where was I? Oh, so then the one-armed dude is following Harrison Ford. They're on the train. This guy, like, clearly...
No, you're at the ballroom.
No, I'm not. I haven't finished the train part.
Oh.
I was like, I am not at the ballroom yet. So then, the train bit. So, this guy is sitting across from Harrison Ford. He flips this thing over. He sees his picture. And he's like, oh, no, it's this guy. And he goes to tell the cop. And then, as the cop is looking at Harrison Ford, all of a sudden, the one-armed man appears in the doorway. The one-armed man shoots the cop, which I don't know if they ever, like... The whole rest of the movie, they're always like, you're a cop killer. And I'm like, did anyone at the end of the movie tell him, like, oh, no, it's the one-armed dude? Or is it, like, do people still think he shot a cop? Anyway.
I think we're supposed to assume by the end of the film that they're going to figure out that he's an innocent man.
Yeah, but it's just
funny.
They
take the handcuffs off.
Yeah, it was just funny because I was like, did they call him a cop killer? And then I was like, just kidding. So then they, him and the one-armed dude fight a bunch. He ends up. Like, knocking the one-armed dude out and then handcuffs him to the train, jumps out the window of the train car onto the platform, and then walks into the ballroom.
There you go.
So then he goes up, and he basically is in the ballroom just to call out his friend, or his old college buddy who worked with him. He's just, his job is to just basically be like, I know what you did.
Mm-hmm.
You're the reason my wife is dead, blah, 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 blah. And so then, and this is the part that gets me in the movie, is, like, Tommy Lee Jones explains everything.
Oh, it's funny that you say that.
In that scene, rather than, like, either us seeing it in a flashback, which they've used throughout the whole fucking movie, so you could have done a flashback.
Can I actually, because I have a really cool thing with that. Okay, because if you listen to the commentary, it's very obvious that Tommy Lee Jones doesn't really know how to do commentary, because it starts out with... him talking to the director, and the director's like, I think you should be saying more here. Mm-hmm. And then you can tell that they splice in anything he says, and it makes no sense, because it's like, this is Chicago. Oh, that's helpful. Well, at the end of the movie, he's like, so because we improv so much, and they had to completely change the ending because they couldn't film a car in a subway, and they were like, oh, we'll do it in the laundry of the hotel that we're in, because it's a really cool laundry. So they, you know... And again, it was like with Star Wars. It wasn't like they improvised. It was that they got together, they talked about it, they came up with lines, and then they did it. And so he was like, I had to do that because we had to tie in all the loose ends because we had, it was one of the last things they filmed, and they had changed so much. So he goes, so I remember Tommy Lee Jones said that he remembered thinking to himself, okay, I'm in this laundry yelling exposition at a bunch of blue bags. Yeah, I'm never going to work again. He thought it was stupid too, actually.
Because it was. So he like explains the whole fucking movie to Harrison Ford and the guy who screwed him over and the other cop guy who was like obnoxious.
See, but here's the thing though. I do think that it did cause the friend to then try to go after the cop, and then by Harrison Ford saving Tommy Lee Jones's life, he really did see that he was a good guy. Yeah. I mean, so it did sort of connect.
This was after they like fought and fell through ceilings and shit.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and,
so then,
and he hit Joey Pants in the face. I was like, do not kill Joey Pants in this movie.
But basically, then it gets to the end. We realize like that guy is an asshole and like was screwing them over. So he got arrested, correct? Or did he get killed? I don't remember.
I think the last we see him is he's passed out. I don't think we see him, I don't think we see him actually get arrested.
Well, he's theoretically arrested. One armed man is getting put in a car and arrested.
Yeah, that we see.
And Harrison Ford has handcuffs on, but then Tommy Lee Jones takes them off and he's like, I thought you didn't care. And he goes,
This is the thing that I love about the end scene that I think is really cool is the fact that he calls him doctor.
Yeah.
That's very respectful. He takes off the handcuffs, throws them in the front seat, and is like, do you have that? Like, as if he, like, told someone to get him something that's not there quick enough. He takes this ice thing and puts it on his hands. Like, that, through behavior, that just shows so much to me. And that's when he says, I thought you didn't care. And he's like, I don't.
Don't let anyone know.
And then he hits the top of the car, because he's a badass, and they drive off.
Yep.
I love Tommy Lee Jones in this movie, and I didn't appreciate... how great it is until I did listen to the commentary and they talk about how much he helped to shape that role and add these sort of like fun little things, you know, like just adding like a well to something and creating this character and having these really great lines that I just was so, by the end of it, I was like, this is why he won the Oscar. He's so damn charming.
I like that he won an Oscar for this and Harrison Ford didn't win anything.
No.
He wasn't even nominated.
But they did win Best On-Screen Duo at the MTV Movie Awards, and Harrison Ford won the Blockbuster Entertainment Award.
I'm 99% sure Harrison Ford didn't show up for you.
Probably so. Whereas Tommy Lee Jones won the Oscar, the Golden Globe, the Los Angeles Film Critics Association, the Kansas City Film Critics Association, and the Southeastern Film Critics Association Awards. And he thanked Harrison Ford in his acceptance speech. So that's super classy. And that was really, I think, Harrison's one regret. He's like, I wish I had more scenes with Tommy Lee Jones. Like, they really respected each other and had, like, a really good rapport.
I mean, it was fine. I just, there were so many nitpicky things that I was like, are you kidding me? This is, like, basic movie making.
I mean, I don't know, too. It's like, I have a different experience. Like, yes, I haven't seen it in a long time, but I grew up going, this is a classic movie. This is a great movie. I really love it. In fact, I feel like I enjoyed it more than when I watched it originally because of what I knew about Tommy Lee Jones now. But I am sad you didn't like it.
I mean, I liked it. It's just one of those things where, like, I hate when movies do that, when they, like, think we're dumb. So it's like that courtroom scene. I was like, the fuck? That is not how a courtroom works. And so, like, for the fact that it was just kind of like, well, this is how it is, I'm like, no, that's not how a courtroom works. I want to see all they needed to do was have, like, the judge say how does the jury find the defendant.
Yeah, yeah.
And then say we find the defendant guilty on all accounts. Like, give me just that. Like, don't give me any of the exposition, because it made me be like, you guys are dumb and didn't do your fucking job of investigating this case.
That's a character issue. I felt that was absolutely established. They did not do their job.
But no, that was with the cops. The cops, it was not like, the way that it was set up was the cops were like, no, according to the court system, he is guilty. And that's fine. They were trying to make the cops seem like the bad guy when it's like,
they were covering their asses.
No, but that's also on the lawyers. That is not just specifically on the cops. And it's like, so that whole setup, like, literally don't give me any of that. Literally just give me him sitting there and him going, what, you guys think I did this? Give me them, like saying he's guilty, like the jury, and then send him on to jail. And I'm like, I'll learn about all this later.
I have an issue with that, too, is that saying, well, it should have been this, but it was not part. I mean, okay, I guess you just thought they could have done it better. But
yeah,
I hate this sort of modern idea of, well, if I was doing it, I would do it this way. Well, it's good the way it is, though. I mean, it's not perfect.
But here's the thing. It's not
It's a movie about a fugitive. It's not about the court case.
But then don't make it about the... But then don't bring it up. That's my thing, is they literally set it all up to be like, the judge is saying all this stuff. I'm like, that's not... That you took me out of it because it wasn't that fucking...
That happens in movies. I mean, you know, I can't tell you how many movies you watch where they go, oh, it's opening night. The critics are here. Critics don't come to opening night. They come a week to 5 days before so they can write the damn thing and then it can get published the day that it opens. But it's for dramatic purposes.
But that's different. That's fine. Because people don't... That is not common knowledge. That the critics don't come is a very actor thing to know. Not people... A courtroom?
Okay.
Is common knowledge. So to me, it took me out because it was like, you think your audience is fucking dumb because you're like, oh, the judge says. I'm like, a judge doesn't do that. That would be the jury.
I mean, there was an episode of The West Wing on the West Wing podcast. They were talking about an episode of The West Wing, was that there was something that would never happen in, like, the House of Representatives. It would only happen, you know, like, or it wouldn't happen in, it would only happen in the Senate. It wouldn't happen in the House. I forget the difference, but it was one of those things. And one of the guys who was working in the writer's room came from politics, and he decided not to say anything. And then finally he said something, and he said, oh, but this works better with the story that I'm putting together. Like, sometimes you do have to change things. Now, that being said, I realize now it wasn't the director that had a problem with the death sentence, which is from the TV show. I think here's the thing also, too, is that people at that time in the 90s would have been a lot more familiar with this television show. So every time, you know, he says something like, Dr. Richard Kimball, that's like, was like a big name for people. It was a huge show. In fact, I'm going to digress for a little bit, but there's that really great monologue where Tommy Lee Jones, which is also improv'd, we have a fugitive and this is what he is and this is his name and blah, blah, blah. That was for the trailer, but they loved it so much that they kept it for the movie. So, But going back to the trial, so Harrison didn't like that idea. He didn't think that it was actually real, that someone like him would be a rich white guy, to be honest, sentenced to death. Mm-hmm. So he talked to Scott Turow, who wrote Presumed Innocent, and he was like, yeah, no, absolutely. Someone like that would least like just go to jail for the rest of his life because he's a rich white guy. And something that you shouldn't do as an actor is if the director says, hey, let's shoot it both ways, because your way is not going to get in.
No.
You'd think Harrison would have been smarter than that, but also I think he also works well with people, and it sounds like everyone on the set works really well together. Like, even the writer, who it's obvious they did not use anything on the page, was like, oh, I love the process. It was great. I was so happy for the input. Harrison is so good at this. You know, I took all of his suggestions. So, you know, where some writers would be like, you just didn't film anything that I wrote.
Yeah. I'm glad he did that, because that took me out of this movie. Was the, like, if it literally was just like, you're sentenced to life, I would have been like, cool, that I agree with. Yeah. Like, I literally just wanted it to be real. And because if you're gonna fucking do a court case, make it an actually real court case. Like, it doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be exposition. It literally could just be the jury standing up, be like, we find the defendant guilty, and the judge says, I sentence you to life in prison. And that could have been it. So then we got this stupid fucking monologue from a judge that we didn't need.
Well, maybe that happened and we didn't see it. I mean,
it's... The
whole point is that it's...
But the judge wouldn't have that monologue either. That's the thing, is like, you're giving all these extra monologues for dramatic effect. And maybe it is the TV show, but at the same time, it's like, okay, well, as movie makers, not everyone is going to have seen this TV show. And yeah, it was, maybe it's because it was popular in the 90s, and no one now knows 60s, that we know.
1960s.
1960s, but now we only know it, The Fugitive.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, and I agree with you, which you talked about on the show before, you should not make something an assumption. But about the courtroom scene, to me it was, and I was the first, oh, I don't remember this being so short. But it's not about that.
But you got to skip through that. Really,
snappy. You got to get to the fugitive part.
They made it more important by making it like we were dumb. If you would have literally just did like I said and been like, we find the defendant guilty. I did, because it just made me feel like, oh, you think I'm a moron. Like, if this movie is The Fugitive, fucking start it in the middle of him running, and then, because they were using flashbacks. That's my thing. If you weren't using flashbacks, fine, but they used flashbacks the whole fucking movie.
The interrogation scene, I think, was really important.
But they could have flashbacked to that, too. Like, everything could have, like, they were using flashbacks in weird ways, and I like the way the movie was set up. I just don't like that made me feel like the interrogation scene was good because it gave him the, what, do you think I killed my wife? And then the courtroom scene just pissed me off because it made them... The way they wrote that was like, oh, your audience is a fucking... They're all morons.
Well, let's talk about some other stuff in the film then, because you obviously...
That I, like...
Did not like mm-mm. it. So the interrogation scene, for example, which you just said. So that scene, because it was not in the original script at all, they felt that it was important. So they brought in the actors. Mm-hmm. They didn't tell Harrison what the questions were going to be, since it wasn't on paper anyway, and it could be, you know, sort of off the fly. And so all those answers are literally just coming out as, you know, as the character, based on what he's being asked. So it's interesting that you know, lines like that came out, which were important. He used it logically.
The point. He did the point.
Oh, yes, he did.
He did it, like, three times in this movie.
He did it, but there's a particularly really great shot of him just pointing at the cops.
No, wait, what was the... There was the one where he just silently points. Was that in the first Jack Ryan one?
That's in the first Jack Ryan.
Yeah, where he's just... Yeah. And then he walks away. That's my favorite.
And so the beard, apparently, was a really big issue. The big wigs, you know, the executives hated it and fought him on it. But he felt that it was really important for him to be able to blend in, to have a real sort of shift from when, you know,
but
he's a fugitive.
Here's what I don't understand. Why wouldn't it be the reverse? I thought it was the reverse going into this movie.
It takes longer to grow the beard.
But this movie also made it seem like he was a fugitive for at least a week, if not more.
Well, this might be the real reason. Maybe that was something they wanted to do, but they did not want the beard and they hated it because they said the idea was they paid for a movie star and they paid for Harrison Ford, and that people don't recognize Harrison Ford with a beard. So there was no way, even if they decided to say, hey, well, he'll put the beard on later, there would be no way they would have let him do that.
Yes, it was just so strange to me because I was like, he looked like homeless. Like, it was weird. I mean, I guess it's the same thing with the hair. But like, why dye your hair the same shade? Just a little darker. You didn't
think
darker.
It was. See, I think the reasons that I like this movie are not the reasons that you like this movie.
It's
just very dramatic for him, like, you know, shaving it. But
no,
honestly.
But I think I think that's fine. It was just, to me, it's like most times is the reverse where it's like, a clean-shaven man is a fugitive or on the run, and he gets a beard. Or even
not
like,
in movies, though. They would never let a movie star like for that kind of thing have a beard.
Well,
at least
now they would. If this was made now, he would have had a beard. Like after, like it wouldn't have been like what it is now.
Probably.
Like
I think
okay,
more
for
like
instance,
more like independent
in time.
Film.
No, but A Wrinkle in Time. You pay to have hair. Fucking Chris Pine. Play the dad, Chris Pine with the beautiful blue eyes and the clean face, and they literally have him with, like, a bob haircut and a beard. And so it's like, nowadays, that's not the case because you go you go to a movie for the star not because of what they look like. You want to see their work. And back then it was more, oh, Harrison Ford's hot. Everyone's going to go see this because it's Harrison Ford. Looking like Harrison
Ford. I don't necessarily
Ford.
Think it's about him being hot. I think it's about that this is their matinee idol. This face is going to get people in the seats, and if people don't recognize him.
Yeah.
I mean, A Wrinkle in Time is a big budget action movie?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't
and
know.
And it has Oprah and Mindy Kaling and all of them traveling through space.
Big famous action stars. I don't know it. It's a book, right?
It's a space travel movie. Anyways.
In the book, does he have a beard?
No.
Okay.
That's why it's like logic.
I'm talking about the logic of 1993.
Yeah, I don't know. You could have literally shown clips of him without... there are parts where he doesn't have to have a beard. To me, I was just like, it's so weird that this doctor has this burly beard.
Well, he also felt that the beard, as well as, like, the flowered vest that he has, like, which is a little bit different, like, when they're at the event, that it made him seem idiosyncratic, that he was outside the medical establishment and that he was a little sort of, like, you know, a little... Not off, but, like, a little eccentric. Yes. And so the people wouldn't question that maybe he had done it. Except, during the commentary, something that I thought was interesting, the director makes a point of, he says, when he sees his friends, they're all, like, happy to see them, and his friends can't seem to think that he could have done it. Like, the Jane Lynch character, the guy in the morgue. So I was like, yeah, that is right. They're all like, oh, my God, thank God, Richard, oh, my God. Because they can't believe that he did it. But also, very often, sometimes what an actor prepares in their head is not what the director sees.
Yeah, or even, like, I didn't get that at all. I was watching this movie like, yeah, he didn't do it. Like, it's fucking obvious he didn't do it.
So do you want to hear the many ways in which Harrison Ford tried to kill himself, as we like to say, mm-hmm. which was unsafe? So he stood... It's the big what would we say, like a reservoir, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a thing, like the tube. And
oh no, that was like a dam.
It's like a dam, okay. He conceded to wear a wire, but he didn't want to have sort of, you know, a double or anything. And apparently, but this is shocking to me, he's afraid of heights. He says, I don't like heights very much.
He flies planes.
I know. I mean, or maybe this is before he started flying, but he goes, I don't like heights very much. It takes me a minute or two to steal myself from heights, but then I get used to it real quick. So he has, I guess, a momentary, like, fear of heights.
No, that's lying and saying that you're not afraid of heights when you're afraid of heights.
Okay. But
that's you being like, I'm not afraid of heights. It just takes me a minute.
It cost... over $1 million a day to film those scenes. They did it over 2 days, and they used a dummy that cost $12,000. That's what's going over they throw over the...
Yeah.
That's a dummy, and it's a $12,000 dummy.
Well, that's why it looked fucking insane when it was going head first down into the thing.
He also... There's that scene in the bus when the bus crashes, and they did film that scene in a bus, like, on the road, and the director said something very interesting. He said today they would use CGI. They would not actually film it on the road. But that scene and the scene when the actual train crashes, which is an incredible scene as well, was done in North Carolina. So there's when he crashes his face into the side of the bus when mm-hmm. it tips over. That was real, and Harrison wanted to do it.
Sure, he has a scar from it, too.
Probably. And the thing is, I get the reasoning behind it. We've talked about this in a lot of different films, that he wants it to be as real as possible because he knows that the audience won't believe it if they can tell that it's not him. But you should also try to keep yourself from getting hurt. Because then what actually ended up happening, which was an accident, was he really messed up his knee. And you can see him limping through most of the movie. They were filming a scene in North Carolina for the trailer. Someone put something in the wrong place and he veered to get out of the way, like with some sort of filming equipment. And he completely messed up his knee. And then when he's running through the city hall after he goes to see the guy in the jail, when they go through the St. Patrick's Day parade, mm-hmm. he messed it up again. And Tommy Lee Jones said he had to have surgery. Not Tommy Lee Jones, that Harrison Ford had to have surgery on the knee afterwards. Also, that St. Patrick's Day parade, totally real. They did, you know, shots like it was independent film, and they just threw everybody in there. And
so they didn't tell any of those people?
They didn't. The people he walked with, they did ask. They were like, can you walk with, he eventually like walks with a group of people. But like when Tommy Lee Jones shows his badge to one of the cops, that's a real cop. And they were just like, oh, well, it's happening, and this is such a great part of Chicago. Let's just throw things in there. Because that's what the whole movie was.
So those cops didn't know, and they just thought he was a U.S. Marshal chasing someone?
That's what it sounds like. But a lot of the scenes in the movie are just like, well, this is what we need now in this scene. Let's just do it. Let's figure out the lines we're going to do. There's apparently a very famous line near the beginning about a donut that Tommy Lee Jones talks about. Get me a donut with sprinkles on it.
Yeah.
He made that up. So that really was unbelievable to me. They just like, oh, let's just shoot here. Oh, and going back to Julianne Moore.
Mm-hmm.
So originally, Julianne Moore was going to be his love interest. And she was going to take him home and going to help him figure it out. But the director felt, well, that takes away from his love of his wife and sort of the, you know, this section, which I think is very important,
yeah,
of the movie and his through line, if all of a sudden he, like, falls in love with this woman. And yeah, it was funny when I was watching it, because when I originally saw it, Julianne Moore wasn't that big of a star. She had just done Shortcuts, which was sort of the big thing with Robert Altman,
mm-hmm,
that made her a bigger star. You can see she started doing better movies. But this is really sort of at the beginning of that. Either the movie had just come out, but sometimes people, they hear about things. Oh, she's like a new person. And so she was not supposed to have that small part. But I thought, too, I was like, oh, I wonder if she was supposed to be a love interest. Because it seems odd that she's not in it for very long.
In it for 10 minutes.
Yeah. Perhaps. So that, and there's not, sometimes that happens, you know.
Yeah.
I've heard stories sometimes of actors who get to set and find out that the star doesn't want to do the scene. Now they're not going to even film it, let alone just, like, get it cut. So, you know, she probably got to Chicago and they were like, oh, we're sorry, but that's done. Another story that I really like that shows the kind of actor that Harrison is, so we've talked about this before when you do like coverage of an actor and you shoot the other actor from behind and sometimes they get a double. It was a really long day when they did the interrogation scene. So the director sent Harrison home and he found out, he didn't know they were filming the other coverage of the, mm-hmm, the interrogation scene. He was like, no, I'm staying. Which is very generous because then you get something to act off of instead of like either doing with the script supervisor or like a piece of tape or a stick.
Yeah.
You know, he could have gone home and he was like, no, I want to be there for my fellow actors. So I thought that was really cool. Also going back to things that could have killed Harrison Ford, the river when he's, you know, swimming and,
yeah,
the leaves and everything was 41 degrees. And he had to sit in a tub of hot water, not necessarily a hot tub, but a tub of hot water between takes.
Why? Not necessary.
Very necessary. You could get hypothermia.
No, I'm saying, why would he, like, it wasn't necessary for him to do that kind of shit.
Well, you know, it's very emotional when you see him, you know, and how tired he is and how freaked out he is. I think it's an important part of...
It is, but I'm saying he literally just puts himself in danger in every movie.
That's true. That in general, that is true.
Yeah, like, he literally, instead of just being like, I can drink it, could have been like, hi, can we get, I don't know, can I have, like, a heater in my outfit? Or, can, like, because there are heater things you can put in outfits.
Well, you wear, a wetsuit underneath.
Yeah, he literally could have done something like that to, like,
no, but even when you do that, you have to be in that hot tub. Like, there's obviously going to be a scene like that in Blade Runner because Ryan Gosling talks about sitting in a hot tub with Harrison Ford in between takes. It's done in movies because it's going to keep you from dying.
That's so
It's the human body. No one's making this up.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm like, that's insane. Get heated water. It's the 21st.
It was a river. It was an actual river.
You can make fake rivers too, and for movies.
Okay, fine. Fake river for Rachel.
Yeah, because I'm not gonna die.
The train sequence, which I think is pretty amazing, and today would probably be done with all CGI, was completely real. They had a boxcar, a flat car, and a pusher train. They wanted it to go just above 32 miles per hour because that would be like sort of safe, fast speed, and it went 42. It cost $1 million. They had obviously several cameras, and the cameras were in steel-lined boxes. And you know that there's that shot where the front of the train just like kind of comes towards the camera?
Mm-hmm.
That one took 2 hours to dig out and actually went through the steel box, broke the camera, which I think makes total sense.
Yeah.
But the film was safe. So they were able to do it, but they lost the camera. And the director was also saying that they probably would have used miniatures usually, but they really wanted to be able to do this. And it just sounds ridiculously amazing that they did that. You want to talk about some of the actors other than Tommy Lee Jones? So we have Celia Ward, who played Helen Kimball, his wife.
What else have I seen her in?
She's like that actress. She was in the Independence Day sequel.
Oh, never mind. I know exactly who she is.
I feel like she's this sort of actress who shows up kind of like the really great character actors. Well, when I was growing up, she was on a show called Sisters that I used to love, even though it was way too adult for me. And in the 80s, she was in Hello Again, which is a movie from 87, which I didn't realize, with Shelley Long that I used to watch.
Yeah, I'm trying to see. Maybe Once and Again.
Yeah, see, there's anything that you recognize. But, like, if you look at her IMDb, she's just like, oh, she's been in this and this and this. But you may not necessarily know her name. She's just a sort of really beautiful character actress who shows up as someone's wife.
She was in House.
Oh, that's right. She was. She was in a couple episodes of House. Recurring role. I think, yeah.
Yeah, she was.
I forgot about that. Joe Pantoliano, whose nickname is Joey Pants. I'm not making that up. So I have to call him Joey Pants. Matrix, Memento, Francis and the Goonies, Risky Business, Midnight Run, which I was going to say I feel like you'd like Midnight Run, but now I feel like you would just pick it apart. It's one of my favorite movies. He was in The Sopranos. He's just that guy. He's Joey Pants.
Wait, what's his real last name?
Pantoliano, means pants.
Okay, so he is Italian. Okay.
Yeah, which means pants in Italian. So everyone calls him Joey Pants. I gotta stop saying that. So I love him, and I literally said out loud, "Don't you kill Joey Pants." We have Daniel Roebuck, who's one of the U.S. Marshals, and I feel like you like him because he's in Lost.
That's that guy. Yeah, yep. Oh, he's in Man of the High Castle?
Yeah, he's got a recurring role on that. Yeah, I don't think I'm on that season.
This guy is the douchebag from Lost. So, like, he's the guy in the very first season. He's in the very first season. Hold on.
Okay. Well, you do that. And obviously, we mentioned that Jane Lynch had a small part. It was one of her first movies. She was only in Second City at the time. It was before she was in Best in Show. Which I found out recently from a podcast that she talked about that she got that because she did, a commercial that Christopher... I almost said Christopher Reeve. What's his name? The guy who did Best in Show, whose name, because I've spent way too much time doing all this research that now I can't speak, as usual. And he shares my birthday. And anyway, he directed all those awesome movies called, like, Best in Show. And then one that, like, freaked me out, Christopher Guest. See, I'm not losing it. It's Christopher Guest, guys. He's awesome. Yeah.
Missed that that's who you were searching for. I was like,
I'm like, Christopher, or we could say Christopher Hayden Guest, which was, you know, because he is of royalty in the UK. That is true. But Jane Lynch, as I said, Kristen Nielsen, who I recognized and I sort of freaked out. She has like a couple lines. She's like, oh, I recognize that guy. I remember him because he died. What? She was young Mrs. Landingham in The West Wing, and I just heard her interviewed on the podcast. I recognized her voice first because I looked down for a second, but she also was on Psych. Like, she's been on a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And there are two Cusacks in this movie because you cannot, film a movie in Chicago without a Cusack. It is the law. There is Dick Cusack, who's the dad, who I'd actually never seen act before. And we talked about the Cusacks also, their parents, I mean, in the Working Girl episode because of their influence around the time of Second City mm-hmm. and acting in Chicago and how many people went through their acting classes. He was the lawyer.
Yeah.
And then one of the technicians, when they're figuring out, you know, I think I hear the stop, the scene that you hate.
Yeah.
There's Bill Cusack, who's one of the brothers who's in that. There's like a million people in this. L. Scott Caldwell plays Deputy Marshal Erin Poole. She was not the only one who was not in the sequel. Yes, there's a sequel to The Fugitive.
Is it called Runaway Bride?
Yes, it is called Runaway Bride.
Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts.
And Richard Gere.
And then she's like taken up by Sam Gerard. It's called U.S. Marshals. And they're running after Wesley Snipes. And Robert Downey Jr. is in it, apparently. I have not seen it. It was from 1998. But yes, they made a sequel. And then there's just really amazing character actors. Like one of the arresting cops, Ron Dean. Been like in a million and one things. The guard who like squeals out and is like, I saved that guy. The guy with the mustache who runs away. How do you say his name? Richard...
Ryle?
Yeah, he was in Office Space, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. He's like just that guy who's like in everything, and he's got a great Chicago accent. It's got some really great Chicago
people.
Yeah, I think so. I'm so sad you didn't love this movie.
I liked it. I didn't love it, but I enjoyed it.
Well, at least you didn't hate it.
Yeah.
So the number one movie in 1993 was... That you can guess.
Wait, say it again?
Okay, the number one movie in 1993 was...
The Little Mermaid.
No, it was Jurassic Park.
Oh, I thought that was 92.
The second was Mrs. Doubtfire, and the third highest grossing film of 1993...
Jurassic Park.
The third...
The Fugitive?
Yes, The Fugitive. Yeah, Jurassic Park was number one and number three. And as we mentioned, Tommy Lee Jones went on to win the Oscar. 93 was also around the time that Bill Clinton is now president. He's visiting Harrison and Jackson Hole because his wife, Hillary Clinton, went to the same high school as Harrison, not at the same time. Harrison and his wife also started to become more involved in Tibet. You can find out more of that when we were on Beltway Banthas. We talked a lot about his work around that time and his social awareness. I don't think I'll be watching U.S. Marshals, but again, mm-hmm. I do find Tommy Lee Jones extremely charming in this movie.
Is Tommy Lee Jones in U.S. Marshals?
Yeah, he's the lead.
Ugh.
You can't do the movie without Sam Gerard. Also, okay, one last thing. Also, while I was watching it, I realized how much this is Les Mis, in a sense. Like, at the core of it. Did you catch that? Am I the only one? Like, you have...
I understand where you're pulling it from, but I also am like, no.
Like, I'm not saying it is, based on Les Mis. It's not. But that's sort of that classic sort of cat and mouse of, you know... Sam Gerard being the... now I can't think of the character names, of course, but...
Sam Gerard would be Javert. And then Harrison Ford would be Jean Valjean.
There you go. But apparently it's just me. Oh, and me. Oh, go ahead. Do you have any last thoughts?
What? No. I get what you're saying, though, because but it's not true because Jean Valjean committed the crime.
Yes. No, that's why I'm not saying I think this is based...
Jean Valjean stole a loaf of bread. He was just...
It's not like I think overly like 10 Things I Hate About You is Taming of the Shrew. Like, I don't mean that. I just mean like, oh, it has sort of that seed of Les Mis.
Yeah.
As many things do. So I think we should talk about our sponsor.
Yes. I use the headshot stuff every day.
Well, we should mention it first. So we are sponsored by the amazing Haus Urban, hausurban.com, HAUSURA. Oop. I can't spell. HAUSURBAN.com, Haus Urban. And they have amazing skincare and lip balms. And you were saying you tried one of their products.
Yeah, I use Headshot every single day. It's just little drops that you put in your moisturizer or just put on your face. And I use it every single day.
So it like makes your face like smooth?
Yeah, my face is real baby soft.
Nice.
Real baby soft.
So you're ready for headshots, but you don't necessarily have to be someone who has headshots.
Correct.
To use it.
Right.
I'm a big fan of the Sangria Lip Glide.
Mm-hmm.
For, you know, obvious reasons. I use the body butter every morning when I get out of the shower on my hands. It's called Wisteria Lane. Oh, my God, my voice. And what we're offering, or I should say Haus Urban is offering, is if you go on their website and you see some of their awesome products, your first order, you will get 20% off if you use the code FORD. Let me see if I can spell that. It's F-O-R-D.
Yeah.
And we are so thankful to have them as a sponsor of our show. And we love the products. And we hope that you will learn to love the products.
Eat these awesome.
Are you going to be trying the bath soak next time?
Oh, I've done that too.
Oh,
did you? Yeah, I took a bath with it.
It sounds, because I did not get to try that. And I think I want to try that next. But that sounded really nice.
It's very nice.
So you can soak and you can smell pretty. And your lips can be fabulously moist.
Yeah. You'll look to half your age.
So you would, like, be a zygote then?
Yeah, I'd be a baby.
You'd be a baby. So HaasUrban.com. And let us know what you think.
Yeah.
Like, let us know how much you like the products. We would love to hear that.
Yeah, because they're pretty dope.
Or tweet to them. They're very, very big on social media. So that is the end of our fugitive episode. I feel like the 90s are going to be pretty much me going, I really liked it. And you going, I thought it was fine.
Yeah. I don't like 90s movies. Oh, yeah, it's fine.
Well, okay, here's a question. Is there anything from the 90s that you like?
Yeah, not
a
Harrison Air Force Ford One. Movie.
Okay, all right. Well, that's an obvious. We know you love Harrison. We love Harrison Ford in Air Force One. But a non-Harrison Ford movie. Like, are there any other 90s movies that you like, or you just hate them all?
Yeah. I mean, like, there are 90s movies I thoroughly enjoy. My favorite movie was made in 99. I just hate cheesy 90 movies. I hate movies that you literally can pinpoint the decade. I've always been that way. If it's like one of those movies where you literally are like, oh no, it's just a good movie, like in general, perfect. Like,
so when you say pinpoint the decade, you don't mean like, oh, this is dated because of what's in it, like components like the cell phone or the clothes. You just mean that the story feels dated because we demand more reality today.
Pretty much, yes.
Okay.
That's why, like, or not even, like, reality. Just, like, Moulin Rouge is one of my favorite movies. But it's just because that movie just kind of takes, like, it just takes a story and it makes it its own. And it's not, like, it doesn't make you, it doesn't, like, act like the audience is stupid. It does, like, it just is a very nice story. And that's what I like about it, where this movie, while I enjoyed it, kind of made me feel like they thought the audience was stupid.
Okay.
And that's why I didn't like it a lot.
And that, I think, is not something, I mean, I don't agree, but in general, I don't think that's necessarily a 90s trait. Although I have talked about that I do think a lot of movies in the 90s do have sort of saccharine quality in a sense.
Yeah.
But that happens today sometimes, where they're dumbing down to the audience.
Oh, yeah.
You have a high bar, Rachel Leishman.
I do. Don't dumb down on your audience. I hate it.
Well, I enjoyed it, but we will be talking about a movie in 2 weeks that, spoiler, maybe the two of us don't like very much.
No, it made no sense.
Clear and Present Danger from 1994. But we were also going to be talking about a cameo in a movie that you may not know. I didn't know that Harrison was in. We're going to be talking about his appearance on the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. So it will still be fun.
It just might not be terribly long because we're not going to care about this movie.
Well, we always care for you. True. I mean the audience. So please remember to, after you listen to this episode, to go on our website under contests, and under our seasonal contest, you can answer a trivia question from this show and put yourself in to win an amazing prize pack of your choice. Don't know why I'm talking like this. We have a Carrie Fisher prize pack. We have an Indiana Jones. We have a Blade Runner choice. We have a Star Wars choice. So it's not just, oh, you know what? I'm not going to enter because I don't like the prize. We have a prize for everything. There is something you're going to like.
Yep.
Every social media that you follow, you get another extra entry. So the more places you follow and the more times you enter, because after the next episode drops, the question from before goes away. Which means you just lost another chance to get a whole bunch of entries. And so far, shocker, the people who enter the most are the ones that end up winning.
Yep.
Wow. My mind is blown. Also, if you would review us on iTunes, we will send you a sticker.
Yep.
So we're going to review us. For a very, very short time, we'll be doing that. If you go to iTunes, remember to start a profile first. Review us, and then you want to email us at thefordcastpodcast@gmail.com, your review, and we'll send you off something. This is, of course, for a limited time, but please review us anytime. We will not always bribe you, but we would love that. And honest, you know, if you love the show, and we're going to read some reviews on the air. In fact, next episode, we'll read some of those. And then we also have contests on all of our social media.
Yeah.
We are on Tumblr. We are on Instagram. And we are on Facebook at The Fordcast Podcast. We are on Twitter at The Fordcast PC. I am personally on Twitter at Lauren Milberger. Rachel.
I am on Twitter at Rachel Leishman.
Wow, that's so creative. Where are you on Tumblr and Instagram?
Rachel _ Leishman on Instagram.
I have chills.
And Rach Solo on Tumblr.
That's my favorite.
Rachel.
And they can find your writing where?
You can go to culturist.com, poprap.com, fangirlish.com, drwhowatch.com, and wizardsandwhatnot.com.
Awesome. I'm going to be doing more freelance work, and I just put out a review of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon, which I loved, from Amy Sherman-Palladino, and that is on Travelogue, and you can get the link on my website or on social media. So that'll be out very soon.
Woo!
Woo! So if you don't like the 90s like Rachel, we apologize, but we'll be done with them soon. But if not, join us in 2 weeks.
Woo!
Woo! Bye!
Bye.